Good evening. It's Sunday, March 12th, 2017, and this is the Writer's Room Takeover of Pucknology After Dark. And you know what? I already by not muting myself. Horrible, foul. Do-over, game. Not for the game, because the Sharks won 5-1 tonight over the Dallas Stars. A very thrilling win, and we'll get to all the coverage of that, plus news from around the league, of course, and our very special guest welcoming him back later on. If you want to finteract with us...
Oh, don't finteract. That's none of that.
Don't finteract?
None of that.
Well, hey, me and you are on the graphic at least. You can follow me at KevinLacy22, and you can follow Ian Reed at iReadPucknology. There's the special guest at Puck_over_glass, and of course at Zach Devine, and as usual for Pucknology After Dark, we are presented by Audible, an Amazon company with over 180,000 titles. Audible is the world's largest provider of premium audiobooks and spoken word content. Listen on your phone, tablet, or MP3 player anytime, anywhere. Plus, you can try Audible for a free 30-day trial, and regardless of whether you maintain the service, you'll get your first audiobook for free. Visit audibletrial.com/PAD to sign up right away. It helps support our show, and everyone wins. Books that speak to you, that's Audible. On the panel tonight, I am, as I mentioned, Kevin Lacy. We also have Zach Devine. Hi, Zach.
Hello, everyone.
Welcoming back Drew Weber.
Yeah! Play me a video.
Where's his montage?
Yeah, I need my video montage for the return.
Yeah,
I
have to do something.
See, the last time we were on, we didn't have to draw our own lower thirds. So, and then, of course, your host is the one and only Ian Reed.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Writer's Room Takeover of Pucknology After Dark. So for those who are uninitiated to what happens when we do this, we will do our best to recap the game, maybe a little quicker than we normally would. And then we'll just go into crap that we would normally talk about in any other week. And it's going to be awesome. So let's get started with the game. Sharks win 5-1.
No, Ian. Yeah. We've got to start with the game.
Oh, the game.
Yeah.
The
game. Okay. So luckily for all of our friends and fans out in Norway, the Storhammer beat Sparta today in 11 periods of action. They won 2-1 on an overtime power play goal. Shots on goal ended up being in that game 96-93 in favor of of Storhammer. And both of those goalies were the starting goalies. So you had one netminder that stopped 95 shots and the other that stopped 91. And so Sparta and Storhammer are back in action in Norway D1 action.
Yep.
For game 5. And hopefully it will be quite a bit shorter.
I thought you were going to say starts in about 5 minutes, because that's how long earlier today's game
just
was.
Just about. It took 8 hours and 20 minutes. That game started 6 p.m. local time, and it ended at almost 2:30. The PR guy that was running that, he was broadcasting live on Facebook. He still had a 2.5-hour drive home back.
Oh. Suddenly that Quad OT loss doesn't sound so bad.
No. It's like, I mean, heck, at that point, you're at least getting home before, you know, last call.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's something else, man. longest professional hockey game ever played.
Ever. Beat an 80-something-year-old record, right? 1936 was the longest game ever played somewhere in North America. I didn't catch
it. It was an NHL game. I just forget who was in it.
Gotcha. So we have a new champion, and watching those guys, the legs were heavy.
And there's so much. I like, you think it's bad on just the on normal ice, like North American ice. You think that's bad, but like that ice is huge. Like, yeah. To move, it's just I don't even know.
At what point are you just kind of like, ah, screw it, just take the loss.
You know what's interesting? I was watching about a period and a half of it. There was a lot of posts. I mean, those guys, it was like there was coasting, and then mad skating action. Quick, let's end this. And then like neutral zone play, you could have timed it with a sundial. It was brutal. But anyway, so that was the game we were here to discuss. Everyone remember to subscribe, click, like.
I don't even think Mike's in the chat, though. What a jerk.
Well, he can watch it on the replay.
Jerk. All right, so the San Jose Sharks beat the Dallas Stars by a 5-1 score. What were your initial thoughts from the game? Drew, you're back. Let's start with you.
Oh, great. I'm still nervous, guys.
Oh, man.
I thought the Sharks played an excellent game. The first period was kind of shaky, but you know what? If you can get four shots on Kari Lehtinen, apparently you can still score two goals. So it wasn't too bad. I was really hoping that Lehtinen was going to come back in after Niemi gave up goal number 5.
I actually thought it was going to happen.
But yeah, I think the Sharks played a great game. They had a lot of great pressure in the offensive zone, a lot of good net front presence. So let's hope they can keep that going.
What did you think, Kevin?
I think that the first period, they really needed to shake some cobwebs out. The cobwebs that they had the latter two periods of yesterday's game against the Predators. But thankfully they did. They were rolling in that second period, and then they didn't take the foot off the gas much in the third. So I did think after that first, oh boy, it's another one of those Aaron Dell starts where he has to stand on his head, but it was nice to see the team show up that second, that last 40.
Sorry, the chat. Zach, what were your thoughts, initial thoughts on the game?
Well, if you really need some help on your shooting percentage, you just need to play the Dallas Stars. you look at who scored for the Sharks. Joel Ward finally got one through. Chris Tierney scored his first goal since February 2nd. We all know what Pavelski could do, but he had, two good goals, including his fourth career, shorthanded goal. Just a lot going on there. And that defense for Dallas, you look at them on paper, and it's amazing how bad they are. You know, you look at the personnel that they deploy, and Steven Johns is solid. Esa Lindell is a player. He's getting his first pro season up from the Texas Stars. I'm really bullish on him long-term. Mm-hmm. They've got the pieces, and just somehow, I don't know, coaching / deployment / who knows what, but it was a miserable night for them.
Well, we were talking about this all preseason, where before the season, off season, preseason, whatever, about how bad Dallas is going to be defensively. You remember when they signed Jiří Hudler, and I said, "What are they signing him to play defense?"
Right. You know? Mm-hmm. Well, they tried to put all their kids up, and then and sometimes that works out, and sometimes it doesn't. Hello, Dallas. Hello, Arizona.
Right.
And it's like you lose Goligoski, you lose Demers, you lose Odia, and you're basically not replacing them. You're replacing them with kids, and you can't expect them to perform at the same level as those three would.
No, definitely not. But you look at the system that they were playing, and there wasn't one. So if you've got these young talented players, and you're putting them out there like, hey, just go out and skate backwards. What else is going to happen?
Skate backwards, flail stick.
There's a bit more to defensive systems than wave your stick around menacingly and skate backwards with fervor. That's not a thing.
What do you guys think Lindy Ruff is done after this year in Dallas?
Yes. Stick a fork in him. You might as well start figuring out your sides. He's done.
He probably is done, but I don't blame him. I don't think this is his fault. When your GM goes out and gets you Niemi and Lehtinen as your goaltending tandem, I don't think any coach is going to save you.
I don't think it's the end for Lindy Ruff, because it took like 34 years for him to get fired from Buffalo. So the guy's got longevity. I think he'll stick it out. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he was fired, but honestly, I don't think it's going to happen. And it, like Drew said, it's not his fault.
That's where Hitchcock's going to go. Forget Vegas. Hitchcock's going back to Dallas.
I mean, that would be the thing to do, right? It seems like that's what everyone's doing, just retreading their old glory days and
Carlisle,
going back to different places. And
all the cool kids are doing it.
All the cool kids are doing it. Yeah, maybe Hitchcock goes back to Dallas. That'd be interesting. I mean, it's not like Dallas couldn't afford him. It'll be interesting to see what Jim Neal does over the summer, because I think, obviously, look at that goaltending. I mean, what did they say? It was like something like, I think they said 19 times, I think they said, that both goalies had to be in a game.
12.
Like, 12. That's 12. Okay, yeah. Sorry, 12. But just as bad. I mean, 19 would be ridiculous, but 12 isn't much better.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's a lot of games to have 12, to play both your goalies in.
Yeah, 12 is ridiculous. 19 would have been ridiculous. Which obviously is three levels higher than ridiculous. So 12 is ridiculous. So you were right, Ian.
All right. So, yeah, 12. Okay. So 12's bad. Yeah.
The meds are working. I'm telling you guys, I'm not feeling too hot. And I'm sleepy. Fire and Dayquil.
Sleepy Mofo brings up in the chat, Dallas needs Ed Belfour in net right now. You know, when Antti Niemi was kind of wondering whether he wanted to come in the net or not for the game today, when they were trying to pull Kari Lehtinen, all I was thinking was if Ed Belfour was still on Dallas, he would straight up refuse and just leave, because he never true. Wanted to play the Sharks in this.
They'd have to go find Marty Turco again.
Yeah, Belfour would be back there spending his 5 hours getting his skates just right.
Yeah.
And I can't get out there, coach. Sorry. I'm still working on the third edge.
Yeah. It was funny because it was like, in previous years, right, like Niemi, like the backup goalie would have been over where Niemi came out from, but they've extended the benches so that the goalie can actually sit on the bench. So it was kind of funny that Niemi was nowhere to be found. I don't know if he was eating hot dogs or what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, honestly, if I had watched that defense and what they were doing, I too would have been nowhere to be found if I was in that minor.
You know, yeah.
Can't blame them.
They kept saying Lehtinen, and I was thinking, yeah, Yuri Lehtinen might actually be a better goaltender than Kari Lehtinen at this point. And poor Kari. What a promising career that just has not panned out.
Kari Lehtinen. I mean, come on.
Letting in the goals.
Yeah.
Oh.
How to say it.
But let's talk about the Sharks, guys. Let's talk about the Sharks. Captain America. Oh, I mean, it was the shorthanded goal, especially. What a release on that shot. I mean, that was incredible. Great shot. Too bad he didn't get the hat trick, but a great performance.
Yeah. Thanks, Niemi.
Yeah, I'm surprised Pavelski was able to get that shorthanded goal, because that defense is draped all over him. It's amazing he's able to elevate it over Niemi's shoulder.
Yeah.
And the Cobra struck.
Yeah, my boy. Expose him.
The Cobra exposed him. Yeah, pretty much. That's where I'm at. that was nice. I mean, look, you got offense, but I mean, they did come out a little sluggish in the first. And obviously, I think we're going to see that. I mean, this month, I mean, obviously we're still early into it, but I mean these back-to-back games are obviously gonna have an effect on them, and I think, you know, once they got their feet under them, they seem to be okay, and you know, thankfully Dallas has bad goalies. I can't really say more than that.
How many more back-to-back games do they have so far this month?
Four more,
three or four more?
They have a stupid amount of back-to-backs this month.
Yeah. No, I think they have six this month, but that's why I was asking how many more do they have?
I think they have three or four. I can't read properly. I'm counting three.
Chris says three, yeah.
Yeah, I'm counting three.
Okay. But yeah, you know, Marlowe gets on the board, far side, stick side, whatever you want to call it, nice shot, corner. Joe Pavelski just decides, seems like a good shot selection. Going to do the exact same thing, letting in overcommitted again to that left side. Way to go there. What a pass by Couture to Joel Ward. Joel Ward's got, they had a stat like Joel Ward has 16 points the last 28 games or something like that. Like he's picking it up.
He's on fire.
For all the flack that we've dealt him for sure this year. I mean, I've personally dealt him all kinds of flack. I'm a jerk.
Yeah. I still think you can't write him off until he doesn't perform in the playoffs, because that's his bread and butter.
Take him out and you take him out and old yeller him.
Take him out and hold the LRM.
I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, that's what you got to do at that point. If Wardo can't show up in the playoffs, then that's it. It's old Yeller time for him.
So is old Yellering him just like buying him out? Are we old Yellering him?
we're gonna literally do it. We're just gonna take him back and do what needs to be done.
And then the Pavelski shorty, and then Chris Tierney diving for a shot, which was awesome because Antti Niemi was kind of diving all over the place himself. So apparently Tierney gets a 10 for the dive on the goal and Niemi gets a 4. So
yeah, no, absolutely. The only real, I mean, it's a good game and I hate harping on stupid stuff, but if I don't, people will yell at me. So I would be remiss if I didn't bring up that the Sharks went 0-for-5 on the power play tonight, even though they won by a bajillion goals. It's still a little bit concerning, though.
I'm not super concerned, honestly. Like, power play goals are worth the same as regular goals. Granted, you'd like the Sharks to be better, you know, than whatever they are right now, 21st in the NHL or something. But, like, they're still 11th in the NHL in scoring, which isn't terrible.
No, I know.
And they're, one of the best defensive teams in the league. So I'm not overly concerned with the power play, although it does get frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, on a game like tonight, I mean, it's not something I want to, overly harp on. I have to bring it up. I think it's in my contract that I have to bring it up when we're on the After Dark channel. But, I mean, all in all, it's frustrating, and it's just something that it concerns me going into the playoffs a little bit, that the power play has been basically anemic this year. Zach, you've been quiet for a while. What do you think?
I'm firmly in the camp where it is a big deal. I am concerned about it. I agree with Drew. I mean, right now, a goal on the power play, a goal shorthanded, luckily for Joe Thornton, a goal into an empty net, all count the same. The issue is that all goals become much, much more difficult to score in the postseason. And you've got to be able to score when you've got advantages. And obviously, the man advantage is, by very definition, an advantage. It is concerning for me to see the Sharks against the worst road penalty kill team in the NHL. They kill 71.4% of power plays on the road. Nobody does it worse than the Dallas Stars on the road. The Sharks could not find 1 out of 5, and one of them was super abbreviated. So realistically, you know, they were 0-for-4, right? 0-for-4. That's still, you know, looking at the averages, right? That means Dallas allows 28.6% success rate. So the Sharks should have had at least one, having none, and really no good looks. I don't know. I'm concerned.
I am too. I mean, right now. Yeah. Looking it
Chris,
up.
Chris actually mentioned in the chat real quick, the 14-second power play was the best one. He's right.
He is right.
So we need to throw that really short one back in. So yeah, they were 0-for-5. Their best one was a whopping 14 seconds. So great point, Chris. So yeah, we were shortchanging the effectiveness of the Dallas Stars penalty killers.
That's true. The Sharks currently are 25th in the NHL for power play percentage at a 16.5% clip. They are well below all the other playoff teams at this point. Yeah. I think the next playoff team is the Senators at 17.7, and they're at 22. And then the Rangers are at 18.7 at 18. Everyone else is kind of in there. So that's concerning.
Yeah. I think so.
What do we got here? So let me just look at what else looking at other stuff here.
I do like how Randy Hahn totally cursed the Stars power play though by saying, yeah, they're 30th in the league in power play or penalty kill, which of course was frustrating as a Sharks fan to watch our power play struggle. But then they say, and they've also given up 10 shorthanded goals, 11 shorthanded goals.
How about Brent Burns on the ice today at the start of the game? Did anyone catch that?
No.
So basically, Jamie Baker interviews. He interviews Burnsy at the start of the game and asks him about, like, obviously the four games and two nights on the ice. And Burns basically says, "Well, our ice is always garbage anyway." I'm paraphrasing, but that was basically what he said. He said, like, the ice is always bad anyway.
Well, luckily for him, he only has to skate on it for another 8.5 years.
Right, yeah, no doubt.
Oh, man. You know what? I'm glad we can laugh about it, though. The Sharks and Barracuda took 3 out of 4 on that crappy ice. 4 games in 2 days, and we got 3 out of 4, so... Not too bad there.
Yeah. I mean, there was a concert there Friday night.
Right.
And then 4 hockey games in 34 hours. The fact that there was ice is impressive, especially in Northern California during an unseasonably warm spell. So, hey, not bad.
They almost had to play water polo instead.
Yeah. I mean, you know, both teams had to play on it.
No. I just like the fact that Burnsy came out and said, yeah, the ice is always bad. I mean, yeah, I like it. The ice in San Jose. It's both teams play on it. I'm not trying to, you know, make any excuses or say anything. I just thought it was funny that Burnsy was like, our ice is always bad.
It's better than Madison Square Garden at any time. You could play 100 hockey games on it this weekend.
No. Oh, man. Didn't think the puck was frozen either. I'm just looking out. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's looking, obviously the ice is going to be a concern going forward. And especially with the Barracuda, they're primed for a deep run too. We'll get to that later on. So let's kind of move along here. What have you guys thought of Yannick Hansen so far? I've been pretty impressed. I still think we paid too much, but I have been pleasantly surprised with what we got. Zach, how do you feel?
So I talked to a few of people, and there were the Sharks and two other playoff teams that were in on it for Yannick Hansen late, and that's why the Sharks had to pay what they had to pay. That's the word I'm getting. But... you know, we'll see. I agree with Ian. I think we paid too much either way. You know, that's just a lot to give up. Mm-hmm. But at the flip side of it is Yannick Hansen has seemed to make Joe Thornton shoot more. And that, I think, increases his efficacy. So if Yannick Hansen makes Joe Thornton shoot more, makes him more dangerous, and Joe Thornton is the straw that stirs the Sharks' drink, I guess we'll take it.
That's a funny poll, but you're right. Thornton has been shooting more since Hansen came in.
I just assumed it was like he got his 1,000 assists, and now he's like, okay, now what's my goal? What's the next 1,000
goals?
That doesn't fit my narrative, Ian, so we're going to go back to what I said.
Okay.
And, just throw me under the bus. Jeez.
No, I'm not. I just thought maybe, you know, he had to change it up. He's like, okay, these assists are good. I need some goals now. Drew, what have you thought of Yannick Hansen so far?
I think Yannick Hansen has looked incredible in the few games that, you know, he's been here. He's been an absolute menace in front of the net, creating traffic, and it kind of lets Pavelski release a little bit more for higher tips or to even shoot more. And then, like you said, Joe Thornton's been shooting more. Is it an overpayment? Absolutely. But at the same time, based on how DeBoer and Doug Wilson were handling Goldobin, I don't think there's a chance in hell he was ever going to be on the Sharks team consistently. And even though he was performing so well in the AHL, management just showed no trust in him while he's up in the NHL. He's benched like every freaking game.
Yeah.
Zach looks like he disagrees with me so much.
No, I think it's a fair take. I truly do. For what Goldobin was, the Sharks just didn't seem to be able to understand that he's going to create 5 chances and probably be directly responsible for 1 against. Right. If you're good with that from Brent Burns, why would you not be good with that with a dynamic playmaking shooting winger? especially when you've got such defensively responsible centers to pair him with, right? Mm-hmm. Logan Couture is probably one of the best and certainly the most underrated two-way center in the NHL.
Absolutely.
Tomáš Hertl he's certainly responsible. He plays a 200-foot game. We're still seeing him grow as a center. Chris Tierney just brings defense. And Joe Thornton really controls play for long spells, so you don't really have to worry about defense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So really, who cares if Goldobin does or doesn't play defense? He needs to retrieve pucks.
Absolutely.
No. Yeah, but, I mean, it is what it is. I definitely hear the argument that, you know, Goldobin might never get a fair shake in San Jose. That's fair. I just still think that, you know, and look, I've been happy with Hansen so far, but I don't think I'm ever going to be happy like that was the return. Like, you know, I kind of go back to the thoughts that I had when the trade went down, where it's like, if you're going to move Goldobin, then at least swing for the fences.
The other thing too is that, if I remember right, Hansen has to be protected. So not only are you losing Goldobin and your pick, but you're also potentially losing another four that you may have wanted to keep in expansion.
True, but at the same time, like, if that's the price you're going to pay to get Hansen, you're going to protect him anyway, because you don't want to lose Hansen and Goldobin for nothing.
True. Right. Yeah, I'm fine with that. Look, if they, we talked about this, you know, just last night, actually, me and Zach talked about this, where I was like, you know, if the Sharks lost Chris Tierney to expansion, I'm not complaining, because we've got Chris Tierney and spades down in the AHL right now. You could use Carpenter, who I don't know gets another deal, or you can bring up Dan O'Regan, who I think could also fit in that spot really, really well. So I would much rather, you know, if they could take Tierney, because also the other thing you have to remember too is that with next year, Burns's things kicking in, you know, Daniel Regan's on his entry level contract next year still, and Chris Tierney needs a pay raise. So if you're looking to squeeze some pennies, Chris Tierney going away might not be a terrible thing for the Sharks.
And it's also the final year of Vlasic's stupendous $4.25 million contract.
Deal of the fucking decade right there.
Yeah, you know, that contract looks maybe the best ever.
I'd argue that. Look how, I'm someone who lobbies for Vlasic to win the Norris like every year, and he's only making like 4.2. Right. But I'll take that contract any day of the week.
Yeah. Right.
For a guy who now already has played 800 NHL games, congratulations, number 44.
Yep. Very nice.
Never played in the AHL.
Nope.
Maybe that's why he's so good.
He didn't have to play for the summer. Yeah.
Oh.
Well, no, he escaped the queue before it made him terrible.
That's right.
He escaped Patrick Waugh then.
Yeah, Jamie Baker was talking about that on the broadcast about how, I guess, Ron Wilson wanted to send him back to the queue, or someone wanted to send him back to the queue, and
yeah, Ron Wilson
was like, no.
Yeah, he forced their hand.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, Vlasic's such a great defenseman. I mean, I it scares me to think what he's going to get, though. I mean, but these are the things you have to consider going forward, right? And that's, again, you know, Chris Tierney, you're going to have to give him a raise if you can use Dan O'Regan in that same spot for his entry-level contract. I mean, don't you do that? It's not like it might even be an improvement. I don't think there's a drop-off. At worst, I think you get lateral movement, but I still think O'Regan's better.
I just like Chris Tierney so much. I love Tierney's defensive game, but I know that his value has dropped significantly since his ridiculous ending of 2015.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when you look at it from a cap perspective, I don't want him to be the next Matt Nieto.
Right.
Where you hold him too long and then, you know, you hold him too long and then you get nothing for him.
And then he goes to play with, you know, Duchesne and McKinnon.
Right, yeah, and then lights it up. All right, so the GM meetings were just, you know, the past week over a little bit ago. You know, so obviously there was, like, some stuff being discussed, and not a whole lot got changed, but I still thought there'd be some interesting things to discuss. So I think my first question for everyone is, if you could change something in the game, if you were the hockey god, what would you change tomorrow? I'll start with Zach.
Oh. I give up. What?
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, I mean, Drew, if you've got something, go for it. Let me think on that for a second.
So something I would change overnight, and I feel like this is the obvious answer, but I'd get rid of coaches' challenges.
Get rid of it completely.
I would get rid of them. I would get rid of them completely, but I would make offsides more available for review. So if you have another Duchesne offside buffer incident and an official sees it, they can go back and overturn it. But it slows the game down a lot, mm-hmm. which I don't mind so much, but I know a lot of fans do. And it's also just, it's so, if you can't tell the play was offsides in real time, then it had no influence on the actual play itself.
Yeah. I would probably, if I could change one thing tomorrow, I would have changed the offside rule. As long as I would get rid of this, you know, is your skate up, is your skate down silliness. I think I would just let it, if the puck goes across the line before you do, you're onside. So I would change that. And I think I would, I don't know if I would get rid of the coaches' challenges, but I think like for an offside, if there's like a certain amount of time where play is gone, then obviously like I hate these like 2 minutes have passed in the zone and then you review it and it's offside. And I don't know, that bothers me a lot. So I'd probably do something in that respect. Because I'd make it take go quicker. I feel like these challenges and reviews are starting to go way too long.
Mm-hmm.
Zach, have you come up with anything?
I have. Okay. I would completely revamp the CHL NHL player transfer agreement.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So is that the, like, people from the CHL can go to AHL then instead of going to the CHL, or?
So I've actually thought a lot about this. What I would do, I would give each team one exemption every 3 years. So everyone would start out with one exemption. You would be able to use it once, and then once you used it, you couldn't use it for 3 more years. So yep. You would need a truly exceptional player, right? Somebody that is completely like, what are you doing in the OHL? Like a Dylan Strom.
Or Mitch Marner last year.
Yeah, Mitch Marner last year. I mean, a player that is just literally, even this year, I saw Dylan Dubé with the Kelowna Rockets. He was, he was just all over the place. He probably could have been there. Or Matthew Barzal. He has NHL-itis so bad, and it doesn't matter. He's still putting up, you know, a pair of points every single game. So I would change that, because the fact that they're calling these kids amateurs, I still think is a joke. You know, they're going out, they're doing everything that you see a Sharks player doing. Cody Glass for the Portland Winterhawks, he's got to do as well in addition to going to school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
You know, they're doing fan meet and greets, they're doing charity events, they're doing signings. They're forced to come out and talk to, you know, men in dark coats, you know, whatever they want. You know, that's not amateur. It's just not.
No, that's fair. Kevin, anything that you would change?
I think it's funny that this was something that we teased for what, 6 weeks on Pucknology Writers Room. Today we're going to talk about what we would do to fix the NHL. And now
I think
here
I was
it
still
is
on the show when we were talking about
March,
that.
Yeah, and March 12th, we have finally gotten to that point.
We just have a lot of great content, Kevin, and it takes a while to sort through it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Take that.
I would change offsides a little bit. Not just the coach's challenge has to go, but they need to figure out what the heck the blue line means for offsides, because the whole like pick your skate up thing that bothers me. But more importantly, it's like if the puck is already in the offensive zone And the defenseman basically holds the puck on the blue line. It counts as in. So the blue line is in, right? But when you're entering the zone, the blue line, the guy's on the blue line, it's still offsides. How does that work? Like, they need to figure out whether the blue line is in the zone or not in the zone.
No, you could drag your skate on the blue line. It's that you can't lift off of it. That's why you'll see guys drag a leg behind them.
Right.
Because it actually has to be foot down, touching the ice, dragged behind them. So,
right. Yeah, and that's kind of where I was at too. So basically nothing did. I mean, just kind of go over quickly some of the things here. I'll get you guys' thoughts on if you would make any changes or not. Like, obviously, offside rule didn't do anything with the video review. I mean, it is what it is. I hate some of these reviews because they take far too long. The points format, it seems like there's always rumblings about changing the points format. I don't understand really why, because from an NHL perspective, I think you have to like the fact that your team has the illusion of being in it until the end. You know, so I don't see, and it wouldn't, I don't think getting rid of the loser point or going to a 3-2-1, like we've looked at this. It doesn't make a huge, like it'll move one or two teams around, but it's usually not significant enough that I think it's as big an issue as people think it is. Where are you guys at on the point system, Kevin? I'll start with you.
I've been saying for years there should be no point for losing in overtime. I really don't care about a 3-point system versus a 2-point system, but if any other sport you lose in overtime, you don't get a point. You shouldn't get a point in hockey overtime. I don't mind the point in shootout because shootout isn't real hockey. But if you want to get your 2 points over your opponent, especially in a division rivalry, you need to close it out in regulation or overtime.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, to me, like, other than, like I said, about having like teams artificially look in the hunt, I don't understand. If a team can't lose, if you can't tie a game anymore, why don't you just go to wins and losses, just like any other sport? I don't know. Zach, what do you think?
I think that the NHL is not going to change it.
No, I agree.
and I don't think I would either. The idea, I think, and I think the NHL has done it, is you've kept teams in it until the very, very end. You know, we went to the trade deadline, and it was hard to really call which teams were buyers and sellers. You know, there were, like, the Dallas Stars, you know, 3 weeks ago, they were still, you know, pretty much in the thick of it a bit. I mean, we all knew how this was going to shake out for them, and it has. But you could see them where it's like, well, they might move, one of their older players would get back something that might help them make a run. So, a hockey trade as opposed to a sell-off. And I think that the NHL hates the tanking model. I think that the parody of it, it helps keep teams in it, helps sell to the fan base. So that's where I think the NHL is. So I'm okay with it. I mean, I understand it.
It's funny. Vince G in the chat, you're either playoff bound in the hunt or the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, that's about right.
It is. It really is.
I liked Chris in the chat with the take points away for teams with a high PDO, but that's analytics humor.
Oh no.
Who
hasn't gone yet? Go on. Drew, have I let you talk on this yet?
No, you haven't. Jerk.
Wow. So moving right along.
So I'm with Kevin. I don't think you should have a loser point. I doubt the league will change it, but come on, this is the big boy league. This is the NHL. You lost. You don't get anything for it. And at the same time, it's like, let's say you have a Sharks Capitals game kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Game's tied 1-1 with a minute left. Why am I going to take a risk in regulation when I'm just going to surrender a point to an Eastern Conference team that has no impact on me in the standings? I'm just going to shut the game down and go into OT. So I think taking away the loser point or going to an alternate system like a 3-2-1 it will make at least the ending of games more exciting, as opposed to just kind of seeing play just totally shut down and pretty much end in a boring way, eventually in a shootout probably.
All right. So one rule that they did change going into next year, obviously it has to go through the competition committee, but I don't see why it wouldn't. And this is already a rule in the AHL. They've changed it now so that they're going to remove timeouts after icing. So if you can't ice the puck and then call a timeout and then rest your guys.
Great. So that just gives Peter DeBoer more reason to just waste all of his timeouts on coaches' challenge. Not going to use it on an icing. Might as well use it on a coaches' challenge.
Oh, man. You know what? I understand the idea here. Obviously, unrested players equals sloppy play equals more goals. But I think if that's your answer to more goals, then you don't understand the problem. I don't know. Zach, what do you think on this?
I'm a bad one to ask on this because I was at the Barracudas 0-0 going into the shootout game against the Grand Rapids Griffins on Saturday, and that was one of the best hockey games I've seen this year.
Yep.
You know, I good hockey doesn't mean high scoring hockey.
Right.
I agree.
In fact, generally, as the Dallas Stars illustrate, it's generally not the best bet to give up a ton of goals. So I don't know. I'm good with a lot of I'm actually really good with how the game is right now. I truly am. You know, I understand the punishment, if you will, that you can't use a timeout you know, to rest your guys, but you only have one. This isn't basketball where every team gets 37 timeouts per half, you know? So honestly, I'd let him keep it, you know, because if you've just got one and that means you can't do a coach's challenge, you can't call a timeout late in the game when you're down by a goal. If you think that icing play is so pivotal, let him burn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Zach. Zach said exactly what I was going to say, where it's like, yeah, you only have one. And if you really want to use it on an icing to rest your players because you don't think they're going to win a face-off and clear the zone, then so be it. But they don't get to challenge anymore. If they're down a goal with a minute 20 left and there's an offensive zone face-off, you can't set that up anymore. You have to just kind of figure it out. So I think using your timeout on an icing is punishment enough. I don't think you have to make it so that you can't, so that you can't do it.
Yeah. Kevin,
keeping coach's challenge in, would you guys change it to where the team would be penalized rather than losing their timeout for losing a coach's challenge?
Oh, so it's like what, like a 2-minute penalty for
delay,
like delay of game?
Yeah,
like we need more delay of game penalties.
No, I mean that's a good idea, but I would say no again to kind of that same logic. There's only one.
Yeah.
You know, if a team had like two coaches' challenges and a timeout, yeah, Billy club the heck out of them. It's like,
for sure.
You went back to your little video, you know, tablet and said, oh, that guy's skate was lifted off the ice 1/8 of an inch, so he's offsides, and we get no goal. We've got to rewind the whole game. Yeah, at that point, Billy club them 2 minutes.
But with, I agree. It's just overly punitive with only one timeout to go for the entire game.
And especially with everything else that they're allowing time to kind of sink into.
Right. No, that's fair. Where's my notes? Okay, so let's go into some more radical ideas that seem to come out but get quickly squashed. Would you guys ever touch the size of the net? Because in my opinion, you touch the size of the net and you basically better start a new record book.
Yeah.
Yep. You're gonna piss off a lot of goalies by doing that.
I don't think you're gonna just piss off goalies. I think you're gonna injure players.
Yeah.
You know, the helmets that hockey players wear are already laughably inadequate. And you take a player like Tim Heat, who almost killed Nick Kredilis down in San Diego last Wednesday with a slap shot, and you give him another foot of net up high to shoot at.
Yeah.
that's where you take pucks to the throat, fractured larynx. You've got a concussion problem now. What happens when guys are just missing heads?
Yeah.
Like actually missing a head or half of it.
You look at Yannick Hansen today, took that puck up high, and it's like people shooting that high.
And you look, I mean, if you're going to give everyone sticks so that everyone can be ally of Freddy now, then you got to be mindful of again, if you, especially if you, you know, maybe you make it wider. I don't know. I don't want the Nets change, to be honest. Like, I think the game's fine. And I don't think, you know, like Zach said earlier, a high scoring game doesn't necessarily mean a good game.
Right.
And even so, it's like scoring is down on average. Yeah, it is. But like, the Sharks just scored 5 goals, guys. Like, it's not like high-scoring games aren't possible. They're just not as common as they used to be.
And remember how that was such a big deal earlier in the season?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What if they couldn't score 5 goals all year? What happens?
What would happen? They'd still probably make the playoffs.
I would take a top 10 power play on my team more than I would take 5 goals scored during a season. I'm sorry. If you're trying to come up with a wish list for your hockey team, get the priorities straight, folks.
Yeah, I agree. Here's another one that keeps coming up. I hear like a lot on different podcasts. Let's do. Were you guys at on taking out the blue lines? Because I think, like, as much as I would think that would be fun as hell, I just – isn't the game already too fast when they took the red line out?
Yeah.
Like, when you look at guys moving around, right? Like, I'm don't get me wrong. I am not a put-the-red-line-back-in guy. But when you look at you see a lot more suicide passes now because of the red line not being there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Zach, what do you think?
That amount of crazy just cooks my brain. Like, these guys are so big, so fast, and I think you almost have to leave it in there.
Right.
Right? I mean, some of these passes, and for folks that have seen the Barracuda play quite a bit, Marcus Sorensen down the right side boards on a stretch pass from down deep, from Tim Heat and Joachim Ryan, that's a thing. And you take out the blue line with a player with that kind of speed, I think you're taking away a weapon. I think that would actually screw up the game more, because then everyone starts playing Kevin Constantine's trap system.
Right.
Because you would always have to have somebody, at least one defender, all the way deep. You know, for these crazy cherry pickers, because you can't let a guy behind you. At least with the blue line, you've got a proverbial first line of defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, I think if you take the blue lines out, it's becoming roller hockey. Sorry, Kevin. Roller hockey sucks.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Oh, man. Okay.
By the way, folks, if you like how the chat has been going this evening, how the banter has been going this evening, please subscribe to our channel down below. We thank all of you for watching this evening. Hopefully you were able to see all the Pucknology stuff over this weekend, whether you were at the games, whether you were watching online, whatnot. If you're a new viewer and you like all the banter, please subscribe.
Absolutely. Felix asked a question. Do you think the smaller goalie pants have made any changes? I don't think so.
So the goalie pants idea was because scoring 5-hole is down. And the reason scoring is down 5-hole is you look at how goalies are wearing their pads. Before, they used to wear them really low, and they had those mud flaps in front of their skates to stop pucks down low. Now they're doing the exact inverse. And if you look at how goalie pads are sitting on their skates, they're actually super high. And that's because the top of the pads now – are what closes the 5-hole. It's not even the pants.
Right.
So they haven't addressed the problem. They've made these guys wear slightly tighter shorts for a unknown reason that smarter people than me have decreed and decided, like, hey, the real culprit, We're good.
I feel like they hacked the top off of the pads a little because they were ridiculous before, and then the goalies were kind of complaining about having their knees exposed, and it's like kind of like it's one of those things where it's like you want to keep them safe, but at the same time it's like, you know, like you don't want to give them unfair advantage, but you, again, you know, like everyone shoots the puck at 100 miles an hour now.
Right.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to do, right? Like if you're going to take, no one's going to take these, you know, silly flex sticks away from the players. So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Next time you've got a real good look at a goalie, take a look at an image of a goaltender. Tommy Soderstrom was a good one with the Islanders. He had pads that were so wide. I mean, you could have canoed your way to Hawaii on them. And they were super low. Another player that was famous for those real low mud flaps was Olaf Kolzig on their pads. So take a look at those goalie pads and then go take a look at how Martin Jones, Carey Price, how some of these guys are utilizing their pads now. It's completely different. The cheaters are always a step ahead, always. Yeah.
And goalie lives matter.
Yeah.
goalie
lives matter.
Flow CC in the chat. Kevin turtlenecks will be the next goalie uniform trend. Protect their necks.
And that goes along with Wu-Tang Wednesday. Wu-Tang.
Oh, God.
Protect your neck, kid.
Protect your neck. Oh, my goodness. All right. So one something else I wanted to get to. They kind of over the GM meetings, there's kind of like a kerfluffle over basically that it went, and it's kind of been changed. It's kind of been fluid, but the expansion draft, they're kind of like the NHL is like, no, we don't like having fun. We don't like keeping people happy. So we're just not going to tell you anything and we'll let you know what happens when it's over. Now it's changed up a little bit where my understanding is it's going to be televised. Now they're saying they might release the list instead of not releasing the protected lists at all. I understand the reasons to not be transparent, but I feel like this is such a missed opportunity if they don't be as transparent as possible, because I think there's so much, like you look, I wrote about this on Fear the Finn, but you go and you look at, you know, you go to these sites and they all have these expansion draft tools. And we did one earlier in the year on the air. We did a mock, Vegas draft, and I'm sure we're not alone.
Yeah, I think I picked Trevor Van Riemsdyk, but I think I picked him twice if I remember correctly.
You know what? I mean, that's sometimes that happens. But like to me, I just feel like, you know, if you make it transparent, I mean, at the point that this is happening, you know, you can kind of keep people engaged kind of that whole weekend, just kind of having fun with it. Whereas like if you don't really do anything, I think you're missing an opportunity to keep the fan base engaged. And I feel like it's kind of crappy if you're in Vegas. Like I understand like no one wants to be criticized, but let's be honest. I mean, people are going to speculate anyway. It's not like everyone's going to go, well, I don't have the list, so I don't know who they, you know, I don't know who else McPhee didn't take. So, you know, like people are going to have speculative names of people that probably were available. So they're going to be angry regardless. I don't know. To me, it bothers me that the NHL would be kind of short-sighted in this. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, Vegas needs as much promotion as they can. Whether we're watching whether we're the hardcore hockey fans or the casual fans that Vegas needs to bring in to help become hardcore hockey fans. Like they need to have as much content as they possibly can without placeholders. And this all needs to come about. And I almost feel like what was our favorite salary site that closed down because Vegas
manager.
Yeah,
general manager. I almost feel like they intentionally brought in the dude from general manager to the Vegas management team to close that down. Oh, we want no reputable sites to speculate on who will be protected and exempt and everything like that. Cause Cap Friendly can't seem to get their list together. It changes all the time. I don't get it. And then from a player standpoint, cause I think it was Gary Bettman who said, that they don't want the speculation to be concerning for the players. Yeah, but not knowing if you're even available isn't going to help as a player. Like, all of a sudden you find out with the rest of the world you're on the Golden Knights, you might be going, what the heck? I didn't even know I was going to be available. Like, that's way worse than a player worrying about whether he is going to go or not.
Yeah, I think Vegas, and I think actually Ian wrote about this in his article, where it's like, if you're in Vegas and you're one of the people who bought season tickets for this team, and you want to know more about how your team's going to develop or who might come in kind of thing, like, that would be really exciting for me to kind of look at the list and be like, oh, this is who could end up on this team that I'm going to be watching a lot. But instead, you're not getting that excitement. It's just kind of happening. Like, can you imagine if, let's say, the Sharks don't exist, and there's an expansion team in San Jose, and you love hockey, and you want to know who might be coming to San Jose, and the NHL's like, nah, that's too bad. You're going to find out with everyone else. I think it's stupid. I think you're losing a lot of excitement for the city of Vegas.
What do you think, Zach? You're muted.
Zach, you're on mute.
Thank you. I would like to commend my learned colleagues because I think that they all make excellent points. I wanted to maybe even pull out a little bit further. Okay. The NFL is a global juggernaut. I mean, it might be worth a seat at the G8. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, truly, what a global franchise it is. And you look at what the NFL's done and what it really, truly catapulted itself to what it is now, and it was fantasy sports. They embraced the entire thing. They brought in the fantasy sports. They brought in the salary. They brought in all the speculation. They've created their own network. Everything now has an insider, and the NHL is slowly following that. The way that you take your fans and you turn them into fanatics is you give them the tools to be evangelists for your sport. And as soon as the NHL realizes that we are in the information age and that holding this information, all it does is slow it. You can't stop it. They, as soon as they embrace it, put all of this out, put the salaries out, what the conditions are on trades, on picks, on salaries, on, you know, no movement clauses, modified no trades, you're going to see a flood of interest because it's already there. I mean, all of us, we're all, you know, producing content for a variety of websites that all of you better be reading every single day when you wake up. That's first thing, grab your phone, read Ian, read Drew, read me. I'd say read Kevin, but listen to Kevin.
Yeah, since I haven't written anything in ages, it's okay.
But we still love you. We still love you in a work-related kind of way.
Right.
But, you know, you look at that, how much content has that speculation given the entire world?
No, that's exactly.
And people, if you want to do something fun, write yourself an article on who you think is going to be available in the expansion draft, and then you go post it on hockey forums, you go post it on Reddit, post it wherever your favorite place is, and then prepare to get your asbestos undies shredded in ways that the English language cannot describe. You know.
No matter what you do.
No, it's I agree. I mean, and that's the great thing. And I don't know why the NHL can't see that. And I just think it's because you have too many. Like, they just need some fresh thinking.
Yeah.
In that front office.
Yeah, it's almost like they're still trying to run it like the Nashville draft, where we all just kind of found out, and there were a couple pictures on NHL.com of Mike Dunham, and that was about it. There's your expansion draft, folks. It's been almost 20 years. We need some live coverage.
The other thing is like these expansion lists might like hurt the players or something like that, or like might cause issues between players and GMs and stuff like that. Like the trade block doesn't already exist. Like the Vinny LeCavalier incident or Martin St. Louis incident didn't already happen. Like it still happens. Like, just because you're on an expansion list, I mean, business is business.
Right.
But it's no worse than the trade block.
Right. I mean, are you really going to be like, if, you know, are you going to be all angry? I mean, like, if you're a key guy, then you're probably getting protected. I mean, if you're Chris Tierney and you're angry that Logan Couture is getting protected and not you, then that's your problem, Chris Tierney, because you're Chris Tierney. Get a grip. But I mean, like, when you think of the guys that are not going to get protected, I mean, there'll probably be a couple guys that don't get protected because, you know, for salary reasons, dangle them out for the salary. But it's not like they're oblivious to the fact that they make too much money. You think Dustin Brown's oblivious to the fact that he makes too much money?
Right.
Like, I mean, like, this is going to come as a shock to him that, oh, I'm on the block. Well, of course you're on the block. You make way too much money. Right. I that's the part that really bothers me about, is this idea that, you know, they're gonna do this thing. It's gonna hurt people's feelings when it's like, I play for the Chicago Blackhawks. Everyone has a no movement clause. The choices are already made for them. Of course I'm on the block. Like,
and the Sharks saw this with Dylan Sandoe, right? Mm-hmm. You know, for even down all the way down to prospects. These kids are coming out of junior and they're looking at opportunity up the food chain. Right. So, and if to your point, Ian, which is an excellent one, if Chris Tierney is all heartbroken that he was exposed in the expansion draft and decides that he's got a bad case of NHLitis and he's going to be Mr. Grumpy Pants, which I don't think he would be.
No, I just use him as an example.
Right. Exactly. I'm just being careful before something wild gets out there. Chris Tierney's a hardworking professional, and I understand that. But yes, let's pretend that he had his cranky pills, and that's going to suck not for the Sharks, but for Chris Tierney, because he has Danny O'Regan and Rourke Chartier and some of these other players breathing down their necks, ready to steal their jobs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, tough it up, get back out there, work hard, produce.
Yeah, I
get
agree.
Good.
It's a business.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, right? I mean, it's a business. And I think that I just wish that they would do better business. All right. So Kevin Shattenkirk got suspended for 2 games for charging. I didn't see the hit.
I've not seen the hit either. I heard it was rather egregious.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. Like, yeah, if he had a history, that's 5 games at least. Because here, there's like...
Took a couple goes of it, right?
No, it wasn't so many a couple goes. It's like he like freaking like leapt into him. Like he was freaking like jumping over buildings and stuff.
Like Jimmy Superfly Snuka?
Yeah.
Did you see the Ekblad hit?
Oh. Wait, what?
Did you see the hit on Ekblad?
No, I have not seen the Ekblad hit.
That was pretty bad. That was bad.
I don't know if there was any supplemental discipline that came from that, but that was a nasty. Next.
And that's his second bad concussion, isn't it, in the NHL?
Yeah. No, because didn't he get concussed in the – I want to say he got concussed in the
World Cup.
World Cup.
World Cup, okay. I knew there was 2 since he broke into the league.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to quickly take us around the league, and then we will look at the standings, and then we'll talk some Barracuda quick. So, tonight in action tonight, the New York Rangers defeated the Detroit Red Wings by a score of 4-1 because Detroit's terrible. Montreal beat Edmonton 4-1. Edmonton has now slid all the way into the wild card, I believe, the first wild card spot. So, that is a potential matchup for the Sharks at this point. I'm not scared of Edmonton at all. Chicago beat the Wild 4-2. You know, the Wild and Chicago are dogfighting it out for the top seed there in the Central. As we watched the Sharks beat Dallas 5-1, Dallas is out. Sharks are still awesome. It's all good. The Sharks are now, I think, with Anaheim also winning tonight. They beat the Anaheim Ducks, beat the Washington Capitals 5-2. So it looks like we keep our 7-point spread over the Anaheim Ducks, but we do have a game in hand on them, I believe.
Yes.
Now I have 9 points, I believe, on Edmonton, 9 or 8.
We have 10 points on Edmonton and 9 on Calgary.
Okay.
And then the so I mean it's good. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. I mean the Oilers are kind of losing traction a little bit. I mean they're only 4-5-1 in their last little bit. I'm not afraid of Edmonton at all. If we draw Edmonton,
I'm totally fine with it. I think that while Edmonton's definitely improved this year, I still think that if you can shut down McDavid, and that's no easy feat, and his little buddy Leon Draisaitl, they're a beatable team.
And we've got the personnel to do it. If right. it's not Vlasic Braun, it's Burns Martin. Any two of those guys can shut down McDavid, and the other one Absolutely. Can do work.
So just looking at the standings right now, you have the, like I said, the Sharks with 14 games remaining. Up top, the Anaheim Ducks are in second, and the Calgary Flames are in third. The Edmonton Oilers hold the last wildcard spot. LA Kings are on the outside looking in right now. They've been okay. They've won two in a row. Obviously, the we'll see if the two-headed goalie monster can come through for them. And then Vancouver's out, and Arizona is Arizona. It's bad. They should feel bad.
They should feel bad. Although I also picked Carolina. Carolina was doing so well.
And then Cam Ward remembered he was Cam Ward.
Yeah, and then Cam Ward became Cam Ward again.
So the Pacific, so you can see that the Western Conference playoff race right now, you have St. Louis holding down the last wild card spot. LA is obviously behind them by three. I don't think LA can catch the Oilers. And really, it's to me, it's these two teams. It's going to be St. Louis and LA dogfighting to the end. The Winnipeg Jets have 66 points, and they've played too many games. They have the fewest remaining games out of everyone. Dallas is Dallas. Vancouver is not doing squat. You know, it's pretty much between the Kings and St. Louis at this point to see who's going to take that final Western seed, I would argue.
Mm-hmm. And then there's Colorado.
All right. Let me see if I can make this stop being dumb.
So real quick, Winnipeg, I actually kind of like their chances now that Pavelic's hurt.
Oh, you like, I don't, I think it's just too much.
Get Hellebuck in there.
I think with Hellebuck, with how that offense is, I really like the Trouba-Morrissey pairing, even though Trouba, it sounds like he got hurt. I haven't read up on it. But if you had to pick a dark horse, I like Winnipeg there. Just for giggles.
All right. I you know what? I wouldn't be sad to see the Jets do something. I think the Jets are a team that I want to see so desperately do well because
True North. Go Jets.
True North. Team.
I love that. Every time. I want to yell at it every time I go to
the My favorite thing when I go to games is during the national anthem when they say there's a tweet and it was like, if the refs like had their own thing during the national anthem and it's whenever they say stripes, the refs all yell stripes. So like every game I go to, it's who's broad stripes? Stripes!
And bright. Boo!
All right. So let's wrap this up with some Barracuda talk. I know we did a big Barracuda show yesterday, so we're not going to do, you know, a million years of Barracuda. Started the week, they on Wednesday, they had this wild game with the San Diego goals where there was 8 first period goals and Troy Grosnick was probably as bad as I have seen him all season. Talk about this game.
This game was completely uncharacteristic for both squads. Every chance was a grade A chance. Both of them evidently had taken pages from the Dallas Stars School of Defensive Positioning. And really struggled, I think, overall in the contest. And I talked to both Grosnick and Roy Sommer after today's game against the Gulls. And credit to Sommer, you know, he went right back to Grosnick. You know, he saw kind of what I saw, that it was a rough game for him, but he was hung out to dry. Yeah. It was women and Kuda first, and they just left Troy Grosnick, you know, on a sinking ship. They really did. And the players actually spoke about that. They said that they needed to be better in front of him. And today's game, I think, was that. But, you know, you look at it was a tough week for them. You know, San Diego's right on them for second place in the division. The Griffins are in first place in the Central. And then they came back and played the Gulls a second time. So it was a tough three games. for the Barracuda and to walk away with 5 out of 6 points. I think that's a credit to this young squad.
Yeah, I mean, that game was a gong show for sure. But I wasn't completely thank you. I wasn't completely upset by it. I mean, it was entertaining. It was definitely entertaining to watch. But it was a mess. And you know, you had to credit the Barracuda. I mean, they clawed all the way back in and then lost it in overtime. And you know, during the first half of that game, I'm like, they're just, you know, they're getting exactly what they deserve, and yet they still, you know, I don't think they deserve the win. I don't think they deserve the point they got, but you got to give them credit for clawing back in.
And then the week before that, they clawed back with Daniel Regan's 2 goals to beat, you know, the goals and get in. I think the Barracuda might be in the goals head a little bit. You know, I was kind of watching how players were reacting, and Grosnick was obviously huge. He wasn't really tested. No super grade A chances in today's game, but the goals, kind of their body language, skating back, there was not a lot of secondary scoring. There was not a lot of second chances, a lot of one and dones, and just little slump shoulders on the way back to the bench. I think the Barracuda in a long series, I think it really bodes well for them.
Well, I think part of it is the fact that San Diego has been dominating everyone but the Barracuda over the last 2 months. And not to say that the Barracuda haven't had trouble with San Diego, but it's got to be a little defeating when it's like, this is the one team in our way from leading the conference, basically. Mm-hmm. And we can't beat them. The Barracuda won all 5 home games against them this season. So that's got to be deflating for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought, you know, to finish wrap up on this game, I thought Armalis came in, and I thought he was decent too, coming in based on how the team was playing in front of him too. I mean, it wasn't like they got all that much better when Armalis came in the second. It really wasn't until, I don't want to say the middle of the second, before things kind of really started turning back the Barracuda's way. So you got to give Armalis a little credit too.
And Alex Gallant with that sick pass, by the way.
Yes.
I know you're talking about goaltending, but
amazed that Cordelius still has a knee. Yeah, no doubt. That was hard to watch.
I thought that was ridiculous.
Goal. Yeah.
I tweeted that, and I got in a couple arguments. That was so ridiculous. I mean, he blocked that shot. When a hockey player can't even get to their skates on a penalty kill, something is seriously wrong. Scoring chance or not, you blow it down. If he's out there hobbling and waving a stick and getting in the lane, you know, you're deal with it. You're laying there as bombs are raining down from Howitzer Heed and Joachim Ryan. It's dangerous. It truly is. I don't know. I wish the Barracuda would have almost just taken that puck, kind of like what they do in soccer. Like a guy's hurt, you know, they just shoot it out, and it's like, hey, we get this puck back. Like, you lose the next faceoff,
right?
You know, you have a little talk. You know, fighters do it all the time. There's a lot of discussion that goes on in hockey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I it was really, really hard to watch. Cheryl asking what was the reasoning for not stopping the play is because the goals never had control of the puck, so it was basically considered like a scoring threat. So because it was still a scoring threat, they didn't blow the play dead. And as much as, you know, I like Barracuda scoring as much as the next fan, I just don't, it was hard to watch. And yeah, it was nice to be on the board, but it's like, not, it's, you know, it's like, God, I want to win, but not like that.
I thought that that gave the goals that emotional spark. Cause after that, when the refs didn't blow that out, they came out and they played like hell unleashed for the rest of that period. And that's one of those things when you've got a team that is very talented, the goals are a darn good hockey team. And all of a sudden you just give them a shot of adrenaline straight to the heart. That's tough. That's tough for any team to deal with. And I thought Armalis was actually fantastic in that game.
I thought he was really good.
Thought it was probably one of his best showings. And Ian, to your point, the Gulls are actually third overall in win percentage in the entire league. Number two is the Bayview Penguins, and then number one, San Jose Barracuda with a 722 point percentage.
Just nice. So they come back to SAP Center. They play the Grand Rapids Griffins for the second time this season. The first time was in Grand Rapids. And this one, you know, like we said earlier, it was a shootout win, nothing. Troy Groznik gets the shutout, but it's one of the funnest games of hockey I've watched all year.
Yeah, that was just a good, solid game of hockey.
Clinic. Like, both teams are so good. Now, if these two teams matched up, like ended up meeting in the playoffs at some point, I'm not complaining.
No.
That's so much see television at that point. For me, anyway.
Is Sadowy on that Grand Rapids team?
He is, but okay. He wasn't playing. Unfortunately, it just wasn't his night in the rotation to be in the lineup, so he did not play last night, unfortunately.
Yeah. He was with the team, though. He took part in warm-ups.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah,
he had last time that they played them in Grand Rapids, he had gone to – he was in the E at the time. But he's been recently back up and yeah, really freaking entertaining.
Nice, Vince. Nice.
Yeah, Kevin,
did you have any thoughts on the Griffins game? No?
You're trying me?
Kevin's in the chat right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's plugged into the Matrix.
On the Griffins game, I was really burned out during the Griffins game. It was a good game. I talked about it last night on Barracuda After Dark. So, yeah.
All right. I'll leave you alone. I'm sorry. Go back to fighting in the chat. Zach.
Go get him, Kevin. Get him.
Go, Kevin. So I have a question for you guys then. Do you think the Sharks being in the playoffs and calling up players like Carpenter and Meyer eventually, and LeBanc for like the cup run, how much of an impact is that going to have on how deep the Barracuda go?
I don't think they do it.
You don't think they do it?
No.
Like, don't think they call them up?
No.
Really?
No. I don't. There's no reason to at this point. You could, if you can get everyone up top healthy. You know, you keep Sorensen up and rotate him and Haley out of the lineup as you needed, but I don't think you need to, I think if you look at with the way the lines are playing out now, you have Hansen playing on the top line and I don't see him moving anytime soon because it's been good. The second line, I was kind of surprised they flipped, Ward up there because I thought that line has been pretty good. So you're talking third, fourth line minutes, why would you pull guys up to play 8 minutes when they can play when I don't think they're going to make a significant difference? I don't think Kevin LeBanc on the fourth line is going to make a huge boost.
Okay. I was just curious about
that. Why not let him play? I mean, if someone gets injured, yeah, obviously then, right. You know, then you're going to go call up a LeBanc or a Timo Meier. I don't think a Timo Meier, but potentially those are the names that are obviously going to come up, right? LeBanc, Meier, Carpenter, stuff like that. I don't think if there's no injury and the Barracuda are still playing, they're going to leave it alone. Because look at that experience of having that Calder Cup run is just as good as playing 8 minutes in the NHL.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say it's far more important. You know, you look at some of the players on Columbus and the guys that they're able to call up, they won the Calder Trophy last year with the then Lake Erie Monsters, now Cleveland Monsters.
Right.
And, you know, you're playing in high stakes. No hockey player plays to go through the motions. You know, a game of shinny, you know, pickup, there's still a scoreboard. And so when you can play at a very, very high level, arguably the second highest level in the world, as a 20-year-old, go deep, get used to a playoff grind, get used to what it's like to absolutely hate somebody by game five.
Yeah.
And go out there and still fight through everything. Those are all important lessons. And I would even say, especially for a lot of these players who haven't played a super long season, like a Danny O'Regan, or mm-hmm. Colin Blackwell, some of these guys that might have only played 30, 40 games in a season, like really dragging this on. Like, this is what you have to do to be a professional. Mm-hmm. Get ready for 100 games that are just, you know, would wreck, you know, average people. They're obviously professional athletes. So I'm a, for me personally, I would, barring injury, like Ian said, I would keep all of them down there, and hopefully, you know, both teams are playing well into the late spring, early summer.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would hope for. Because I think, because again, you know, you go back, like I think Sorensen might stay up, but that's not a huge deal because Sorensen's a guy who, you know, he's been through the wars mm-hmm. already. He knows the wars. Right. So he's, mm-hmm. It's not like we're a guy like, you know, Danny O'Regan, or not that Danny O'Regan, I mean, Danny O'Regan's also obviously played, he's seen some wars, but I don't think like this.
Mm-hmm. Not like a 7-game series against the San Diego Goals would be.
Right.
Okay.
You know, that level of experience, there's only one way to get that.
Oh, jeez. Eric, so get ready for Calder Cup playoff action at Solar for America Ice on conflict days. I'm sure they will sort it out.
Eric, I think, is more right than we're giving him credit for.
Oh, man.
Really? That's brutal.
Because, I mean, the Sharks brought in a lot of young players, and yeah. I was familiar with a lot of them. I'd be lying if I said that I thought they'd be leading the AHL.
Vince.
Yeah, Vince, you can just shut that down right there, though, buddy.
Vince with the comment of the night.
Yeah, just go ahead and back that up on out of here. But, appreciate you.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
But what's their new album, Not in This House or something like that? Yeah, see, look, it is for sale if Bon Jovi comes to town. Then they just ship you to the practice facility.
Yeah.
Calder Cup game canceled as a public skate.
Oh, jeez. Oh, come on, guys. Come on. I mean, I don't want to see that. I mean, it could happen, but I don't want to see that because I think, like, this is a huge opportunity. Again, look at people like winners. And I feel like, wouldn't it be something, you know, if the Calder Cup could, you know, if the Barracuda could go to the Calder Cup, like, the last thing you want to see is, like, season ticket holders only. Like, you want to get people in the building. You want to get people watching. This is when, you know, if the Barracuda win a couple of rounds, I would hope that attendance would pick up because I think people would be excited about that. Now, granted, you're probably also, you know, getting a third mortgage on your house to pay for your Sharks tickets, but I'm hoping, you know, they win a couple of rounds and it really translates out to some attendance for them.
You want to hear a dirty dream, Ian?
Okay.
The Barracuda make it to the Calder Cup finals and CSN televises them.
Oh, that would be nice. But
I might be asking for a little much there.
Get you some of that.
I feel like there'd be an important spring training game or something for the A's.
They've got like 17 channels these days. You got to be able to squeeze it out somewhere.
Put right. on like CSN plus number 2 or something, or right. or CSN plus on the right. Ocho.
On the right. Ocho. Jessica's asking, has the Barracuda attendance increased at all? I feel like it's been standard, but you're in the building. You tell me, sir.
Giveaway nights and games that they're the second and the doubleheader are definitely, like, last night's game was very well attended for the Barracuda. They had a very good crowd, and actually two of the players mentioned it afterwards, how it was nice being in a building with some good energy and good noise. But there's attendance is going to be an issue. You know, there's a lot of entertainment options here in the Bay Area.
Yep, that's fair. And then today's game, they beat the San Diego Goals again. Was it 3-0? I want to say it was 3-0.
Yeah, 3-0, if I remember right.
So much hockey today, and my brain's Play-Doh. What was your take from the game today? Kevin, do you have any takes from the game today? So I'll start with you first.
The goals were pretty sweet in that second period.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some nice goals, especially, of course, Buddy Robinson's shorthanded goal, which I tweeted out, my buddy and me.
So Buddy Robinson's fantastic.
Yeah, I hope. But I mean, like that snipe from the blue line by O'Regan to that ended up being the game-winning goal. That's technically two straight game-winning goals for him on the weekend. Man, what a snipe! And kudos to the referee for actually immediately pointing at the net because that puck barely crossed the line, but it absolutely crossed the line.
It's a good deal. Yeah, Zach, what was your thoughts of the game today?
I thought it was just a good kind of tough victory. They really didn't give up any what I would consider grade A chances that they were giving up down in San Diego. Grosnick was solid when called on. You know, O'Regan is as humble a guy as you're going to meet. And so every time, you know, that was kind of the second sharp angle goal he's had in the last 2 weeks. He had, I forget who it was against, but last week he had a real sharp angle. It was a power play marker though. And he pretty much just gave all the credit on the setup. And, you know, he's got some hands on him. And then it's good to see Buddy Robinson get rewarded because he and Adam Holuka and Rourke Chartier, that's been a heck of a line.
It has. It's a great line.
Yeah, I talked to Sommer after the game, and he flat out, you know, he broke them up for a while and then put them back together the last three games. And he said, it's like, we weren't playing good without those guys together. I put them back together, and now it looks like we're playing great again. They just offer so much, you know, size, tenacity. All of them are goal-scoring threats. Chartier, I think, is really coming along well. And then Grosnick, I mean, what can you say? It's his league-leading ninth shutout. He's a UFA at the end of this season. There's a couple jobs opening with the new team coming into the league. So I wrote a piece for Dauber Prospects looking at goaltender prospects from the A that could be in line to threaten for either starting jobs or new jobs or backup jobs. And I think you have to – if you could get Grosnick on the cheap and, you know, at worst he's – dominating for your AHL squad, you know, backstopping your newly acquired kids or potentially pushing for a backup job in the NHL. Why not?
Yeah, wouldn't be the worst thing. I feel like, because I know a lot of questions like, you know, about like, if what would the Sharks do if Aaron Dell gets picked up? I just don't think that's, you know, I've said it 100 times. It's not going to be a thing. Like, if, all due respect to Aaron Dell, there's going to be much better backup goalies or goalies period available to be had in the expansion draft. And I say that with all due respect to Aaron Dell.
More proven goaltending commodities with a further track record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't say better because he's been pretty awesome, but so I wouldn't, yeah. But I mean, there's just gonna be more guys with reputations and again track records, right? And that's not to take anything away from Aaron Dell. I think Aaron Dell's been great this year. I just think that if you're, you know, if you're looking for goalies, you know, you're going to have a guy like Rob always says in the chat, you know, like a guy like Antti Raanta is probably going to get a good long look from Vegas. You know, plus you got to figure what's going on in Pittsburgh. And then, you know, and then there's some other guys too that you could look at. You could look at the Philip gentleman. Brewer. Yes. Thank you. That was exactly where I was going. Yeah. You know,
Scott Darling, so, isn't he available too?
Yeah, he's a free agent. Yep. They could pick him up in free agency.
Right. Yeah, he's a free agent, so they couldn't draft him, but they could definitely sign him. So they're gonna have options. And when you look at those names, what's going on in Nashville? Like, what are they gonna have to expose? I feel like Saros would be safe because he just hasn't played the games.
So UC Saros.
I thought Saros was exempt.
Is exempt.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So if you go to planmyteam.com, you can look at who Zach protected under the expert selections, and I'm going there myself right now and telling you what I do. And while I'm doing that, let's talk to Drew about what he would do in Nashville.
What would you do?
In terms of goaltending or? Like,
I don't know. I just threw you under the bus. Whatever you do.
Whatever. What would you do if you were in Nashville right now?
Nashville, you'd probably go 8-1 because you have such a good decor in Nashville. So you, I don't know who they have to protect off the top of my head. I don't know Nashville's situation too well. But you protect Subban, you protect Yossi, you protect
Ekholm and Ellis.
Ekholm, Ellis, Arvidsson,
Johansson,
and whoever your eighth guy is going to be.
Someone asked me at the Barracuda game yesterday, does James Neal get protected?
So I don't have James Neal protected, actually.
I don't think I had him protected.
Yeah,
either.
I've got Colin Wilson, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Victor Arvidsson.
Arvidsson.
Who is a phenomenal player.
Yeah, Sharks draft Tim Burke. Jeez.
Fourth round, guys. Fourth round.
Yeah. He was an overager, too. Third. So it's like everybody had a couple chances at it.
Passed over 2 years in a row, drafted in his third year of eligibility.
Yeah. And then, yeah, on defense, I've got Ekholm, Subban, Yossi, and Ellis.
And Hackle thinks that they really need to protect Irwin, and I agree.
You can't.
No, I'm kidding. You don't protect that
Irwin. We all just stare like.
I mean, he's put together a nice season for them. You know, he's got 13 points in 61 games, you know, kind of off the proverbial scrap heap. You know, of UFAs. And so, you know, he and Tennyson, you know, over there for Carolina. Those are two players that couldn't fit in the Sharks. We're seeing it with Matt Nieto, seeing it with Tommy Wingles. Sharks are a deep team. And so some of the players that can't squeeze in the lineups, other teams, you know, they can be valuable.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right. We've probably gone longer than we should have, because that's what we do.
Always go longer than we should have.
I know.
This is writer's room. It's what we do.
I know.
Yeah.
Let's go around and get some final thoughts. Drew, how is it being back? Do you miss us?
Of course I miss you guys. I'll be back for, I don't know how often I'm going to be writing, but I'm out of school for the next 3 weeks. So I'll be around whenever you guys want me on. You can always ask me to be on, and I will debate whether or not it's worth my time.
Okay, that's fair.
But no, it's gonna be a fun 3 weeks. I wrote an article that was very disliked on Thursday. I think you could check it out. And yeah,
I want to go and dislike it. What was it on? Drew, tell us.
It was about why I'm concerned for the Sharks, and I didn't put the power play, and everyone's all mad at me now.
Oh, how can you not?
I'm mad at you too now.
I'm not going to lie.
Everyone's all mad at me now.
Yeah.
Was that on Pucknology.net?
That was on Pucknology.net. And then Reddit destroyed me. Oh. Reddit handed my ass back to me.
Wow. Remember, folks, you too can enjoy the benefits of being a content writer by things like what Drew just said, or post your expansion draft picks.
Yes. You want to, if you ever needed a colonoscopy, just start being a hockey writer. Kevin, what's your final thoughts?
My final thoughts were it was a good weekend for both the Sharks and the Barracuda. Yeah, the Sharks lost yesterday, but getting that win over Dallas, you know, it's better that they won tonight than last night, because now they go into this week on a good solid note. And then we talked about it here at the start of March that the Barracuda probably needed at least two wins against the Gulls, and they not only got two wins, they got 5 of the 6 points, as Zach mentioned earlier. So it was great. Just pointing out the calendar, the arena availability calendar, basically, unless the Barracuda game gets moved, which is the final game of the season, if I'm not mistaken, final home game at least, the Sharks will start the playoffs pretty much guaranteed on Wednesday the 12th, with game two being Friday the 14th. That likely means that the Barracuda would start their playoffs right around April 20th, which would be a Thursday night, potentially Friday the 21st. But I don't think, at least for the first round, there will be any building issues, because the SAP Center typically schedules light during the playoff months. I'm at Kevin Lacey 22. You can follow me on Twitter. I'll see you next time, guys.
Oh, man. All right. Zach, final thoughts.
solid week for the Sharks. I think a great week for the Barracuda. Still have some concerns for both squads as we head into the final stretch. I think the Barracuda need to get their top line humming along again. LeBanc has had a little bit of NHL-itis, not quite as much as, say, Shea Theodore has. But, you know, it's just kind of getting in, getting to work. And so it looks to be an exciting week coming up for the Barracuda. They'll play next on Tuesday again at Bakersfield. And then they have a weekend series home and away against the Stockton Heat. So Friday at 7 o'clock, come on out. My interview with a top 15 2017 draft pick, Cody Glass, is live at hockeyprofits.com. I caught up with him and Joachim Blichfeld. The Cody Glass interview you can read at hockeyprofits.com. The Joachim Blichfeld interview you can read at thehockeywriters.com. I just did a good piece on AHL goalies who could be looking for jobs for dauberprospects.com. You can check that out on their featured site. And as always, you can follow me on the old Twitters at Zach the Bear. That's ZAKKTHEBEAR. Or for my Canadian friends, ZAKKTHEBEAR.
Fantastic. All right. I am Ian Reed at I Read Pucknology. I have a couple of things that I really want to get out this week. So stay tuned for that on the Evil Empire. I am looking to release my top 20 prospect list for the San Jose Sharks, which is always an interesting thing. And I'm looking forward to Zach shredding me on Twitter like he did last year.
Get some.
And so yeah,
I've got gifts lined up. It's gonna be brutal. It's gonna be terrible.
It's gonna be
electronic blood and guts everywhere.
Yeah, it's gonna be bad. So stay tuned for that over on the Evil Empire known as For the Fen. And I also will have my Barracuda recap probably tomorrow. So if you enjoyed what you saw tonight, please subscribe to this channel, which is normally the Pucknology After Dark channel. If you liked us specifically, you can find us on the Pucknology Writers Room channel. Just go in the little search box up there, type Pucknology Writers Room, hit subscribe. We do this every Sunday. And another thing, we'll try and I know I'm already getting requests about it. So me and Zach and Kevin, the combination of the three of us will try and figure out a time that we can do another Barracuda After Dark, but this month is going to be so hellacious as far as schedules go. I'm not making any promises, but we'll look. We'll look and we'll see if we can work something out. Aside from that, thanks for watching. Have a good night and so long.